I am so excited that for 2024, Your Brand Amplified is proudly sponsored by one of my favorite platforms, Simplified. This AI-driven platform is a game changer for design and video content. With Simplified, I can effortlessly transform lengthy videos, such as my podcast, into engaging, shareable clips and streamline workflows with an intuitive subtitle generator. For designers out there, you can explore the AI-powered image generator, create compelling presentations, and design eye-catching YouTube thumbnails with ease. Revolutionize your creative process at simplify.com with a free trial. Now let's dive into today's guest.
Welcome to Your Brand Amplified, the podcast where we interview marketers, publicists, and brands to learn their stories, what makes them tick, and tips and tricks that make a difference.
It's funny how podcasting can introduce you to people that you should have met before. And that is the case for my guest today. Somebody who loves salsa dancing is involved in the Asian community in Houston. I was involved in the Asian community in Houston, and I actually did an Asian Dancing with the Stars. So Jerry, I'm going to have to make those introductions for you so that you can do that. Jerry Fu, thank you so much for being on Your Brand Amplified today.
Hey, thanks for having me. Excited for the conversation to come.
Yes, sure. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. And I see that you went from being a pharmacist and in totally different field to now being a conflict resolution coach working in the Asian American community with leaders. Please explain a little bit about how did you go from one to the other? Was it parental expectations, society expectations, and then realizing what you really had a passion for? Was there something else that triggered this desire to go into coaching?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's quite the journey, and I'll do my best to make sure we don't meander too far away from the main themes.
Let's meander away.
Yeah, so I grew up in a family where healthcare was pretty much the norm. My paternal grandfather had practiced medicine in Taiwan for over 50 years, very established. I had uncles that went to med school. I had cousins that went to Harvard that also went to med school. And so initially, I was just seen as next in line. And the challenge was that when I got to college, I realized that I did not have the discipline that my classmates did. And it was very clear that I liked the idea of being a physician more than actually doing the work to become a physician. And it took a long time for me to appreciate and own up to my role in that way. But the nice thing is, well, I still wanted to do healthcare. So I said, well, pharmacy is on the up and up. Maybe this is a good opportunity. And so I actually left after my junior year to start pharmacy school. Wow. And so, yeah, that was an interesting decision. I still don't know what it's like to have a senior year in college. And that's okay, because if you don't know, you don't know. And so finished pharmacy school. And here's where the parental expectations come into play, right? My mom insisted that I should work for a chain pharmacy, even though she's worked another day in her life for a pharmacy. You know, moms know best, right? And right. So kind of in line with the conflict resolution part, right? I didn't know how to deal with my mom's expectations, right? All of a sudden, she just flipped a switch and had the checklist ready, right? Marry this girl, take this job, live here, you know, let mom do these things for you. And the strange part was that I think we both wanted the same things. I just didn't want it on her terms. Mm-hmm. And so being at a point in my life where, yeah, I'm just looking for acceptance. I'm still trying to figure out who I am. And so when you have a loud enough voice in your ear telling you to do something, at some point, you just kind of give in and do it. And so same thing happened at work. You know, patients were difficult. And instead of standing up for myself, I was in an environment where they would just go to my supervisor, complain, and then I'd have to apologize and give them a gift card. And so I was just in this really unhealthy space because I thought to myself, when am I going to be able to really, you know, talk back or fight back or, you know, push back? And so after 5 years of banking away money the way my mom wanted me to, but just not, you know, being happy with my quality of life, I said, okay, I had enough. And so at the time I was working in Tennessee. And then when I leveraged my connections to get a teaching job through a pharmacy consulting company back in Houston, I jumped at the chance to, you know, kind of change some things, shift some things. And just being very short-sighted though about saying, oh, finally I can relax, right? I finally have this company that I'm excited to work for, until I got fired 11 months later. And to your point about what led to this, this is one of those many genesis moments where you realize that I'm no longer working for a company where they might be mad at me, but they would never actually fire me. Now I was actually at a company that was holding me accountable. to the job they were paying me to get done. And they didn't want to hear stories about why I didn't get it done.
Wow.
So again, one of those moments, you look back in hindsight and say, man, I can't believe I used to think that way, right? That I don't want to do the work, but I can convince them that just to lower their expectations. I see it now when I've had to fire people, and it's kind of funny being on the other side of that to say, oh my gosh, right? How can I think that was an acceptable answer? But, you know, my fault for not enforcing that side and continue to enforce that cycle. Anyway, so along the way, yeah, second reality check for my paychecks bounce, filling for crooked doctors at my next job. So really, really tough situation again. How do you confront the boss who's ripping you off? They don't tell you how to handle these situations. And so my friends helped me get out of that job, thankfully, after enough months of chasing down paychecks and praying I didn't get in trouble, and got on with another company that was more legitimate, but couldn't pay more than 8 hours a week. And so I moved out to Austin to get more hours out there working for the same platform. I'm invited by some friends who run a pharmacy leadership nonprofit to help teach some leadership material. And that's where the mentality starts to change, right? Where you say, well, maybe what if I could be a good leader? Before I said, you know, I could never do this. And now I say, well, what if I could? Similar salsa dancing parallels, and we'll get to that later. But you see the same thing there, right? Where you're just like, well, maybe I could be good at it. And you start to say, maybe this is possible. And so when a full-time manager position opened up in Houston that fall, I said, absolutely going to take it. Can't stay safe. It was a great work team in Austin, but it just wasn't home. And so the following year got written up because I was not writing up or firing bad technicians. And so while the company, it has me on probation, they have their funding pulled. And so it was, you know, combination hard lesson, but at the same time, still needed to leave, a little more urgent. And the only reason I get an interview with my next company was that I had leadership experience on my resume. And so I tell people leadership saved my career.
Wow.
And then the funny thing is, even after, right, I have a resume that's more attractive to companies, the companies were like icebergs where they would melt after 1 or 2 years, right? And, you know, a business model wasn't sustainable. So about 7 years ago now, I said, well, maybe this is the start of something different. Maybe I want to focus on people development and not insurance claims because they are just killing me. And so stayed very much a hobby. I didn't know how to start or build a business. And it wasn't until I started my formal coach training in 2020 when the pandemic happened. And so grateful for my current day job, which has lasted 7 years. I never thought anything would last beyond the 5 years I had with the chain pharmacy I started with. But along the way, realized I need to put this dream in motion. And so crazy thing is, I started the company, didn't know where to find money, didn't know how to make money, and managed to appear in about 70 or 80 podcasts, just trying to get my name out there. I did private tutoring to cover the bills. The podcasting led to a publishing opportunity where I published a chapter on conflict resolution in this entrepreneur's book. I couldn't believe watching this happen before my eyes. Still, you know, still straddling two fences, you know, with my day job and the side job. And yeah, but the passion for leadership came when it took some very, very heavy wake-up calls about the way I was living my life to, you know, cause me to lose my job before I realized, you know what, something has to change. And this thing that I've struggled with for so long somehow became a fascination. And then now all of a sudden I want to turn around and help people the way I wish I'd been helped. So that's a bit of a 10,000-foot flyover. Yeah.
No, but that's such a great way, because you are your client. You've been there. You've had the struggles. You've had to go through everything to feel that inner peace, right? And figure out who you were and how to use your own voice. Mm-hmm. And that is the crux of what so many people have a problem with these days. Mm-hmm. Whether you're, you know, it doesn't matter if you're Asian or anything else. We all have those internal struggles, and then they turn into outward struggles because then we don't speak up, we don't use our voice, and we're not unhappy. Then we're not happy, we're unhappy, and then we're not performing the way we should be. It just becomes that spiral that you've just told us about in your own life. And the other thing is the struggle between keeping a full-time job and then really going out all in on your passion and what you really want to end up doing, is what I assume. You'd love to grow that into your full-time business.
Yep, that is the conflict. And you'd laugh, actually. At one point, my dad called me because he found out that I was doing tutoring and the pandemic was still fairly, you know, rampant. And so, why are you tutoring? Don't you make enough as a pharmacist? And I said, that's not what it's for. I'm trying to make money for my business. And he goes, well, what business is this? I said, well, leadership coaching. Oh, no. Don't do that. I don't know what, even know what that is. Right? Like, I didn't know what it was 20 years ago. And here we are, right? Oh, a seat full of coaches trying to all get business.
Well, and it's also that because you were born in the States.
Yes.
Right. And so then I think we also have this other experience of we don't have to do things the same way that our parents did or yeah. that our grandparents did. We have this freedom and flexibility, and there are more opportunities, not just because we're in the United States, but because the world has changed so much. Yeah. And it can be that hard thing to get our elders, who we love and respect, to understand that there is this new world and this new way, and that we can make a livelihood at this and be successful.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is, right? It's, I think of the Jeremy Lin example, right? When he wanted to do basketball, and then all these other Asian parents were criticizing his parents, saying, how is he supposed to get into a good school if he's not going to do extracurriculars? And then he gets into Harvard, right? And then all of a sudden, all these parents, they're thinking such a change, and they realize this cognitive dissonance, like, this can't be correct. Like, he did sports, and he got into the schools that we all wanted to get into, and now they're asking his parents, well, what sport should my kid play to get into Harvard, right? It takes, you know, all it takes is one to set that precedent, and now maybe things are actually, yeah, worked 20 years ago, doesn't work now. What works now, shouldn't expect to work 20 years from now. But here we are, hoping we don't have to be disrupted, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then I'm laughing because that I have the daughter who is 15, already knows what she wants to do for a living, and is very driven, and she has, you know, she's very singularly focused. So it kind of goes in a cycle, I guess.
Yeah, it's a strange thing. There are points where I wish I had gotten more clarity sooner. I just thought, oh, that would just, you know, save me so much time and energy, you know, instead of having to do this wayfinding and spending all this time, energy, and money trying to figure out what I like. And but then there are people that, yeah, you know, like, they're so set on something, but until they realize that they get it and realize, hey, you know, there's more to it than life, they won't realize it until they see it for themselves. And that's okay. Yeah. That's part of the process. Yeah,
exactly. And also, if you hadn't had all these experiences, they're what makes you a better leader and a better coach.
Yes.
And if
Absolutely.
You hadn't gone through that process, you would have missed out on all of that learning experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wanted to put together a book at some point called, like, Patchwork, like, Quilt Leadership or something like that, where and you ask the question, right? Like, what if everything in your life is leading you to become the person you were meant to be? And it's such a hard question, though, because there are some people, I know their stories, right? Like, there's exploitation, and there's all sorts of other, you know, oppressive forces. And to trust that somehow diamond can be squeezed out of like, this really extreme heat, right, and other really tough circumstances.
This
is something we have to hang on to, for sure.
Definitely. So how hard is it to straddle these two worlds of your full-time job and then your tutoring and your coaching?
Oh, it's been tough. I won't, let's not paint over. That's not, how challenging it is to manage your time and energy in such a way, and you realize something's going to have to drop, or you're going to have to drop it. You have the courage to just let some things go. Like, I'm happy to say, right, it's hard to pursue a romantic relationship when you have a day job, side job, and not much else more than that. And you just realize, wow, energy is a precious commodity. Time is a precious commodity.
Yeah.
It gets difficult not resenting the things that take more than you think they should when it comes to what you're trying to move your life toward. So yeah, it's a lot. There's days where if I don't sleep well, you know, I have to write something off, and, you know, just trusting and being patient that things will work out the way they need to, so long as I fight to be intentional every day, even if, you know, I have to take a day off or interruptions come up.
Yeah.
As part of life is disruptions, for sure.
Yeah. And I want to flag that, because it can be hard, because I think we're also people pleasers, right?
Yeah.
We also want to, like, make sure everybody else is happy. And so then it's sometimes that also makes us quiet our voices. But you're saying it's okay to take time off. Like, even if you have a whole day of meetings, it's okay to say, you know what, I need to reschedule. I have had something come up, and not feel like you have to apologize for it, because we all have things go on in our lives, and we need to give each other that grace to do that. And if somebody can't accept that, then maybe they're not for you. Right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The best people in my life are the ones that understand this is just an ongoing negotiation. Like, the question is not whether or not we're going to hang out together or have fun together. It's just a matter of sorting out details when and where and what needs to change, right? The ones that get huffy, the ones that, right, feel entitled, right? And I've been that person. That's what, you know, so I'm not saying, oh, like, how dare these people? Like, I've been that guy. And then for some reason, all of a sudden, all my friends disappeared. It's like, why would you want to hang out with somebody who gets huffy anyway, right? And like you said, there's a mutualistic aspect to this, right? I need to recharge to be my best self, but not just for me. Like, if it were just so I could be my best self, so it won't be for me, then yes, that would be selfish. But if it is, hey, I need to recharge so we can resume this mutualistic interaction, now we're talking, right? Because he says, hey, Jerry can't be fully present to watch this movie if he's too tired. Okay, well, then Jerry should take a nap so that when he has enough energy, now we can watch this together, right?
Yeah.
And so this isn't, oh, I'm not. And then that some people think that's just easy. Oh, well, you know, help me help you. And so they're thinking, well, you know, maybe it's just that simple, right?
Mm-hmm. And you are specifically a coach for Asian leaders. First of all, kudos for knowing your niche, because
yeah.
It takes a lot of business owners a long time to figure out who they're really supposed to serve.
Yeah.
Were you always looking for Asian American because culturally you understand, or is that something that you realized was really your strength?
You know, that's a great question. I'm going to say a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, maybe, right? And I say that not to, you know, give the PC answer, but there is truth to both, right? On one hand, I'll be happy to tell people there's a Taiwanese pastor that has the same life view, has similar life experiences. And you say, hey, you know what? If he's walked a mile in my skin, I'm probably going to take this guy's opinion a little more seriously. Not because I'm specifically saying, oh, well, is he Taiwanese versus Chinese, right? Or does he really understand? But I mean, people will understand, right? When you make references to anime or certain foods or things like that, right? You don't have to try to explain yourself. And there's a time and place for that when someone has fresh eyes, just wants to learn, and you have to learn to articulate that well. And that's great that they're so receptive. And at the same time, you just say, hey, I just want someone who knows the territory, knows the lingo. And that's great. The other is, yeah, knowing that, hey, I struggled to feel like I belong. I struggled to believe in who I was and, you know, what kind of identity and purpose I was working for. Yeah. And I was struggling. I didn't like who I was becoming at the time, right? Right. When we just get bitter and we just say, man, you know, this world is harsh. And to still say, you know what, I'm going to still find a way to kind of leave my mark on the world, not so people can admire me, but that I can leave a legacy so that others can build on it and, you know, have infrastructure in place to help them become even better and reach levels that I could never reach without that building block, then, you know, sure. Right. Now we're getting caught up into something bigger. And yeah, when you have people that are third culture kids and, you know, grow up one way, live in another country, mm-hmm. and no one else relates to them. You know, yeah, right. When your family says your Mandarin isn't good enough and that, you know, but you don't look like everybody else, and you just say, well, you know, this thing that was given to me that I didn't sign up for, you know, I didn't want it for a long time. And now you realize, you know what? This is unapologetically me, right? As one of my authenticity coach friends says, yeah, let's help people be unapologetically themselves. It's like, okay, I like that.
Yeah, I do want to make sure the audience understands people are not monolithic. No. So even in Asian cultures, I am in like Asian groups in my neighborhood, mm-hmm. and people didn't even know there was a separate Thai New Year, right?
Mm.
And they're like, oh, what is this? What is Songkran? And I'm like, oh, okay, let me explain.
Yeah.
You know, this is what year we consider the year, and this is how we do the celebration. We still celebrate Chinese New Year too, but it's different. And there are a lot of nuances, but to your point, being othered and not growing up necessarily going, you know, I grew up in Kansas. And my mom, there was a Thai student association that was pretty large at Kansas University that my mom was part of. So as a kid, but I was a quiet one because I didn't speak Thai. My mom was new to the country, so she was not having us learn.
Yeah.
So I would get picked to be in all of the presentations, you know, and the dances and things because I was the quiet, good one. I wasn't running around because I didn't speak the language. So you deal with all of these different things that are coming at you, and people don't really understand who you are, what you are necessarily when you're trying to move through these different spaces and places.
Yeah. There's this strange term I heard recently, which was pretty funny. There's a Filipino entrepreneur I know who considers herself culturally ambiguous and likes that and leverages that to her advantage to say, you know, yeah, some people say she's Hispanic and her Spanish is actually very good. And it's just funny when, yeah, they start to dance in that space and they're okay with the fact that they can't really be pinned. They like kind of being that chameleon just to say, yeah, well, I know who I am, but I don't have to reveal that yet.
Yeah. 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 Or when you get judged by people who say, oh, you don't look very Thai. I thought you were Mexican or Spanish or something, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we could go down that rabbit hole, but you said the word dance. And so I do want to talk about your salsa dancing.
Let's do it.
That is a passion that you find time for.
Oh, yeah.
So how did you get into dancing as a form of expression?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's such a fun journey to talk about because, yeah, much like the fixed to growth mindset and leadership, those fixed to growth mindset and dancing as well. And so the funniest thing is that my freshman year at Rice, actually, where I went to school, my freshman year, they had a spring formal that was a salsa dancing theme.
Wow.
And they had a terrible lesson. But if you don't know it's a terrible lesson, then you think it's your fault, not the instructor's. And so I just said, oh, like, I'm just going to shelve this forever. And then it wasn't until I got to pharmacy school where some other multicultural friends said, hey, you got to give it another chance. And so by the third year in school, my grades had gelled enough to the point where I knew I could, you know, spend a couple extra nights and not hurt anything. So I took some real lessons. And of course, it was a struggle. And then eventually, much like the leadership struggle, it became a fascination. You know what? Maybe I might actually get good at this. And I started to buy my own DVDs to study for myself. And then, but it's not just a linear progression, right? Like, I graduated from Memphis and moved to Knoxville, which has no salsa scene. They have a great swing dance scene, but no salsa scene. So it got rusty. And of course, I barely started to get some confidence in my dancing. So that was very fleeting. I remember going to a convention, a big convention in the Oakland area, where it's just all workshops and, you know, dancing and live music. I danced with one girl like the entire weekend because I was just too intimidated. I didn't feel like I was actually any good, that I could hold my own. And then I moved to Houston back in 2010. And then my initial group of friends that I had reintroduced to were all into country dancing, like two-stepping. And so, of course, enough peer pressure, right? You're like, okay, I don't know how to do this. And so salsa dancing kind of stayed dormant. There were glimpses here and there that there was a good dancer that just needed a little more practice, a little more opportunity. And then, so yeah, 2014, I remember a Venezuelan friend introduced me to a free event downtown. And he's like, hey, we're going to go salsa dancing. You got to check it out. And I said, okay. I go down there. I see one very skilled, pretty blonde. I said, I have to dance with her. And, you know, I get my chance. I'm locked in, and then I'm in that flow state that we often so talk about. We lose track of time. We're just in the moment. And then I remember after the dance, she gives me a hug. I just said to myself, why did I stay away from this for so long? I was just so scared of embarrassing myself. And nope, I need more of this. And it started to become a weekly thing. And then I actually volunteer as an instructor now with a undergrad salsa group at Rice. You know, so I give back and, you know, challenge these students to, you know, get over their own fear of failure as well. So it's been a very generous community for me and for the people I get to serve now that I'm in a position to kind of share my experiences. So yeah, don't get me wrong. Like, I still need to challenge myself. Like, I got to a point where I said, you know what? I'm pretty good at this socially, right? You're at intermediate level and you have a smile. You got a fighting chance to have a pretty good evening. Yeah. But to take the time to say, okay, am I willing to invest in the next level if I so choose to? And that takes a little more money and time than I can conventionally budget for. But I'm still going to get a taste of it here and there. But yeah, that's the dance journey. I mean, it's amazing. I still have to deal with rejection, though. I mean, and that's always sucks because you see a great dancer and you say, hey, you know, kid of my life. They're like, no. And you just look at me, right? It's an uphill battle convincing Hispanic woman I know what I'm doing. Again, that's just part of the territory. And either you know, can mope over the no, or you can go and keep looking for yeses. Figure out who likes you as much as you like them.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like it was a lot of great leadership training as well in that experience.
Oh,
having to keep overcoming rejection. Having to do something that you thought you weren't good at and then overcome your own internal fears, right?
Oh, yeah.
The discipline it takes to dance. I mean, I was saying before we got on that I was in the best shape of my life when I was training to be at the Asian Dancing with the Stars in Houston. Wow. It was just so fun. And I missed that. I actually went and did a Bollywood pop class with my daughter yesterday. And I was I'm so out of shape. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to sign up for the next one. I'm going to look for more classes and rediscover my love of dancing too. So you need to have that outlet, right?
Oh, yeah.
You work all the time. So although this patchwork led you and the meandering led you to who you are today and helped you understand how to serve people, are there any things that you would go back and tell your younger self that wouldn't take away from those experiences, that learning, but that might help ease the journey a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a wonderful question to ask, to say, well, if I could travel back in time and say, I am the future you. I think the main things I would tell myself, and I'll give some specific examples. So in high school, I was funneled into a German foreign language program. And I remember thinking my junior year, I just wasn't liking the struggle. And I just said, well, when am I ever going to use this, right? And since then, I had a school rotation in Ireland as well, which kind of helped open my eyes. I say all this to say I've met so many German people traveling around the world, whether it's in Taiwan or Prague or Australia or Yosemite, and it's been wonderful. And I could just hear God, whether you're being out to believe in God, I could hear God telling me, I tried, right? I tried to open your eyes and give you a taste. And there's only so much I was going to listen to, right? And so, yeah, that's the first thing. If I had to list two other things, number two, believe in your ability to improve. Because I think that's the turning point. You say, well, will I ever be the best at this? No, but can I get better today? Well, yeah. And you shrink that bar, you shrink that change, lower the bar, and you realize, well, let me just get better and see where that leads you. And then the third is, yeah, travel. Like, get out there, see the world, get perspective. Yeah, step out of your comfort zone, like, literally. Because I remember thinking in college, why would anyone study abroad? Why would you leave your friends, right? But so many people I know, if I could redo college, yeah, I would defer a year, do a semester abroad in the fall, and then come back and hang out with my friends in the spring. So kind of get the best of both worlds. And I understand money and time are you know, at a premium. I like, you know, it'd be a nice idea if we can afford to do that. But yeah, those are some things I'll tell my younger self. Just said, hey, you know, like, open your mind. Don't be so attached to think that your ideas are always going to be correct. Be willing to test them because you never know things might change or what experiences would change your mind about how you feel today.
Yeah. Fantastic. And then let's talk about your career as a leadership and conflict resolution coach.
Yeah.
What are some of the biggest issues that you see, I guess?
Yeah, I think the first issue is being afraid that somehow my conversation will make the situation worse. And that's a big one because some people say, well, if I tell my son to clean his room and then he just doubles down, it's like, well, you know, if you think it's so dirty, you clean it yourself. And and then you just think, oh, geez, I guess now not only is he not going to clean his room, now he's just fussy at me. And then if I try to ask him to do something again, he's probably just going to double down and say, well, you know, I'm not cleaning my room and I'm not doing that either. And you have to realize, and I'm saying this to myself as well as to any of my clients, right? It can't get that much worse, right? like it's worse, but status quo isn't great either. So at least remember that failure doesn't mean you're done. Failure means you're not done, right? And I'll give a very extreme example from personally. At one point, I had to evict a roommate. And, you know, the first time I had to address him after he defaulted on his lease, right? I was thinking, oh, I don't want to do this. And at the same time, he wasn't going to move out until I actually enforced the rules and, you know, had to get the cops involved. And so, yeah, that's the first thing is recognizing, well, instead of thinking, well, I don't want to make this worse, it's like, well, if you're not happy now, it's not going to get better. So may as well experiment to see if what actually will get the response that you need. The second is choosing, yeah, closure over comfort, saying, I don't like it when people are upset with me and I don't like upsetting people. And then you realize you're going to be so much happier and more relieved once you actually go through with that conversation. So choose closure over comfort. And then the third is, if I had to say it, game plan. It's okay to say, I don't know how this conversation will go. It's like, well, let's go ahead and start experimenting and giving you some strategy. Like, there's no shame in preparing for battle, right? There's no shame to say, well, if you need to do a plan, then clearly you aren't, you know, cut out for this. It's like, no, like recognizing I need a plan is what makes me cut out for this. So I'd say those are three of the main issues when we're coaching, because a lot of people in my position that are recovering people pleasers that often relapse, right? We often think, okay, well, do I even have an outcome for this? Because if you don't know, have an idea where the conversation is to go, right, it's not going to go anywhere. And I'll give a client example. So at one point, a client said, hey, you know, my boss blew up at me because I did not answer his phone call while I was at dinner with friends. And then he got mad at me and questioned my commitment to the company the next day. What am I supposed to do? How do I make sure I can address this issue, but not hit tripwires that might get fired? And so we talk, well, what do you want? Do you want an apology? Do you want clear expectations? What are you hoping for this conversation? Because an apology may not be realistic, but if you can explain to him how clearer boundaries around communication and timing will help tamp down the narrative that you are not committed to the job like the boss thinks you ought to be, maybe that's a win, right? And so we kind of discuss some strategy around how to get there. And, you know, like, you prep the conversation, right? You say things like, I'm sorry things aren't better between us right now, right? And so things like that kind of help keep the level of tact and respect at an acceptable level so that people don't think, right? You're not tricking them. You're not manipulating them. You're just trying to set a very gentle stage to say, hey, look, I'm coming to you with both hands open in the effort to reconcile versus try to pin you or ferret an apology out of you because, you know, you should apologize for the way you talk to me. Like, no one talks. You're going to get fired, right? So, yeah, things like that come up a lot when it comes to saying, hey, I need to have this. I need to address this. And I'm not sure going to.
Yeah.
Well, and that brings me to another question about coaching, right? So sometimes people come with a set goal in mind, what they're trying to achieve through the coaching, maybe discover other things. But it sounds like also your clients are able to come to you when they have just these things pop up. And so do you usually work long-term with people? Is it in-person? Is it mostly virtual? Do you do group work or is it all one-on-one? That's a lot of questions.
Yeah. No, let's set the container properly. Yeah. So I think there's merits to each form of coaching, whether it's in-person or virtually or on the phone even. On the phone is actually really offers opportunities that you don't have otherwise as coach because as a coach, you have to learn how to listen well. And when all you can do is focus on voice and the tone and the word choice and the structure, it forces you to observe a lot more intently when it comes to that. I'm always going to be a fan of in-person because usually there's a whiteboard in the room and let's start letting people draw just the creative colors just kind of take off. I do one-on-one coaching. That's probably the majority of the work. I usually like to do engagements between 3 and 6 months. Any more than a year, I would say you might want to evaluate if I'm still the best fit for you. I'm the kind of coach that believes in working myself out of a job. In that at some point, either you need a different voice in your life or you're strong enough not to need my help. There is the opportunity to say, hey, I want you for the next round of challenges. Sure. You know, as long as the check's clear, bring me along. But I think group work facilitating is my jam because that's what I started doing back, 12 years ago now. So keynotes, group workshops, because then you get to read the whole room, you play off the energy of the group, and it's not just dependent on one person carrying it. It's great. So those are the main three. So either it's a day's worth of workshops or 3 to 6 month coaching engagements or one-time keynote, any of those offer their share of value in terms of helping people transform and become the people they want to be.
Yeah. Fantastic. And Jerry, what is the easiest place for people to find out more about you?
I have a free guide helping people navigate through difficult conversations the same way I wish I'd had something like that. Some kind of roadmap. Yeah. And to get in touch with me, the website with the guide is www.adaptingleaders.com/guide. There's also a bunch of other great resources. There's a free blog and you can schedule a complimentary 30-minute call, whether you want to share your story or just say, hey, Jerry, I need a spot check right now.
Wow.
That's all there. Perfectly generous to make those available to people who are interested in saying, hey, you know what? I just barely met this guy, but you know what? Maybe I can try a couple free samples, see what they like. If you like more, hey, let's talk about pricing and budgeting and all that. But if until then, it's okay. Let's just be generous to be generous.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important is a lot of people don't realize, I'm saying this to all the people who just DM people cold on LinkedIn. You have to give, not just ask, right? As leaders, as business people, as small businesses particularly, we need to be able to show that we're adding value to people's lives without just expecting them to buy from us or to sign up for us. And if you don't have that value, you're probably, maybe there are some people who want to work with you, but it drives me crazy when so many people just come at you with their sales pitch immediately and they're not offering anything tangible. Because we all have different strengths and we all have different gifts that we bring to this world. Yeah. And so we need to be able to share them freely. The way that you have just shared with us today on this podcast, the way that you're willing to share with people through your resources, through free session, to see if you can help them work through some things. So thank you for giving that gift. Appreciate it. And Jerry Fu, I always like to ask if you have a favorite quote, mantra, verse, poem.
There's so many to pick from. The first thing that came to mind, which is the four principles of the Designing Your Life certification that I got out of Stanford, which is great. And there's just four very simple things. Number one, get curious, right? Why are things the way they are? How did they get this way? What led to this? How can I make it better? The second is talk to people. Hey, rev up your network, not in a way to kiss up, but hey, you know what? Let me just talk to people. I've got some ideas. Let's share ideas. Let's collaborate and build an improv on each other. The third is try stuff. Hey, you know what? what better way to find it if I like a recipe than to try to make it myself, right? Say, you know what? The only way I'm going to get this insight on what it's like to drive this car is to get behind the wheel. Okay, yeah, let me test drive. And number four, tell your story. Hey, you have a story. Learn how to articulate it well. Let other people share their story and see where that leads. So yeah, get curious. Talk to people. Try stuff. Yeah. Share your story. And we'll see where that leads.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being inspirational to us, to me, and to my audience today. Really appreciate it. And thank you to everybody for watching or listening to this episode of Your Brand Amplified. And I'll be back again soon with another expert to share their story and their advice to help you make your life and your business better.
Want more? Check out amplifywithannika.com or follow me on socials at amplifywithannika.
As we close out today's episode, I want to thank Simplified again for making it possible. For all marketers and creators out there, Simplified is your ally in effortlessly crafting on-brand content with design and video AI. Discover how AI can enhance your creative process at simplify.com. Start for free and elevate your content game. Thanks for listening, and here's to your next creative breakthrough.